Welcome, and this is the second edition of the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, European Desk Editor at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. In the studio with me is Kirill Kobrin, Managing Editor of RFERL's Russian Service. Welcome, Kirill.
Hello.
And Gregory Pfeiffer, Senior Correspondent for RFERL and author of the book, The Great Gamble, The Soviet War in Afghanistan. Welcome, Greg. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Brian.
Today's topic is the regional elections that took place in Russia on March 13th.
Sunday's elections, which took place in 12 regions, have been touted as kind of a dress rehearsal for the upcoming Duma elections, for the upcoming presidential elections in March, and they're setting the stage for the coming political season this year. As the results came in, top Russian officials were very quick to claim victory after the ruling party, United Russia, managed to hold on to its majorities in all 12 Russian regions that were holding elections. Let's listen now to Prime Minister Vladimir Putin and State Duma Speaker Boris Gryzlov declaring victory.
Считаю, что они для Единой России более чем удовлетворительны.
I think that for United Russia, the elections were more than satisfactory. Firstly, because United Russia won in all regions where elections were held. United Russia is the leading political force in all the regions. That's the first thing. Secondly, in those regions which are regarded as problematic for United Russia, and there are such, and it's normal, places like, for example, Kirov, even in these places, United Russia gained 36.7%, where in the previous analogous elections, we only got 25%.
Voters have supported United Russia. This is an assessment of the party's activities. It is support for the authorities, support for the president, and for the leader of our party, Putin. We were led to think that there would be low turnout, that our voters are already apolitical, but the result is obvious.
So Mr. Gryzlov is saying the results are very obvious, but how obvious are they really? Are Putin and Gryzlov being a little bit optimistic here? When you look a little closer at the results, United Russia managed only to win a majority in two regions, Dagestan and Chukotka. What about that, Kirill?
First of all, I see that it was Mr. Putin's mistake. For instance, in the previous elections in Kyiv region, United Russia, they had not 25 or 29, as he's told, but it was 55. So United Russia lost something about 20% in Kyiv region, in Orenburg region, in Kursk region, and so on. So it's not a total disaster. It's a failure. Maybe it's a kind of mild failure for United Russia, but it's not a success. And if we can speak about some successes or gains of some political forces in Russia, of course, it's communists. Communists, Communist Party, and lefts.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because the communists did increase the result this time. And does that point to something in society? Are we looking at a communist revival, or what is this pointing to?
It's not about revival. It's about so-called fake politics in Russia. Because almost every official or Duma political parties in modern Russia are kind of fake, not real. Because what's real politics? Real politics, it's a kind of political groups or parties which represent the real interests of some groups of the population. It's not about modern Russian politics, because there are two pocket parties, one United Russia, another is just Russia. Who are playing just kind of a special kind of game, yes? And the only, it's pity, but the only real political representative of some social needs and so on of Russian population, now they are communists.
But the communists have been losing electorate over the years, right? If you go back to the 1996 presidential election to now, their results seem to tick up a little bit. What is that saying about what's going on in Russian society right now?
I'm not sure that it's about a kind of communist revival. It's about the real social problems in modern Russia. First of all, we can discuss or define some levels of understanding of this problem. Yeah, first of all, it's it's a disappointment in authorities, disappointment in Putin himself and Medvedev, of course, himself, and increasing social problems. And first of all, increasing gap between rich and poor. And that is what communism is about for.
What do you think, Greg? Do you think that do you see this growing concern with social problems? And it seems that these problems are things that the ruling party and the governing authorities have been either unable or unwilling to address. What can this lead to?
Well, I don't. I mean, I think this debate is largely academic. I don't think anything is really going to change. If we're talking about the big picture, there'll be upticks and downticks. The fact is that this was these are regional elections. It's tough to get people interested in regional elections. Although the Central Election Commission did say that voter turnout was slightly higher than it was last time, nevertheless, it's still pretty low. The fact is, at the end of the day, though, that United Russia, the pro-Kremlin party, won 12 of 12 regions. They maintained control. The opposition, the real opposition, because I don't think the Communist Party represents any kind of opposition. It's an opposition on paper. In fact, it's allowed essentially to take part in the electoral process by the Kremlin by essentially providing fake criticism. When it comes to voting on real issues, the Communist Party never really goes against the Kremlin. What we did see, though, again, hundreds of real opposition candidates, a lot of them from the Liberal Yabloko Party, were simply not allowed to run. Officials barred them because of tiny typos and things like that on their registration documents. So I think at the end of the day, and there were also a lot of violations this time. The Golos, the independent monitoring agency, said that there were more violations this time recorded than 2008, if I'm not mistaken. Or they said it was the greatest number of violations since 2008. Mm-hmm. What I think this shows is that it sort of points the way to how the Duma elections are going to be run. We saw various new barriers, including upping the barrier to get into regional legislatures in three regions, up from 5% of the vote to 7%, things like that. This is a dress rehearsal for the Kremlin needs to know what more it needs to do in the Duma elections to fix them properly next time.
Let's pick up on this. If this is a dress rehearsal, and I agree with you that these are fake elections and that most of the real opposition was excluded, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But if you really look at this, I mean, the United Russia won less than 40% in Tver, less than 40% in Kirov. They barely cleared 40% in Nizhny Novgorod, Kursk, and Ханты-Мансийск. Ведомости reported yesterday that the leadership of United Russia was so upset about the results, they stopped the distribution of the exit polls, and they did not, for the first time in my memory, hold their post-election press conference, which told me that they were very disturbed by these results. So granted that these are fake elections, and granted that a lot of this is orchestrated, there is some, and I want to get into this a little bit in the next segment, there is some reflection of a disgruntled public. Do you think this points to anything like that? I'd like to hear from both of you on this.
I mean, I don't think, you know, as long as oil prices continue rising, I don't think the Kremlin has anything to worry about. Oil prices have sustained, high oil prices have essentially created and sustained the Putin regime presidency and premiership. As we know now, oil prices are rising. However, there are changes. The Levada agency recently conducted a poll of sentiment among Russians. And for the first time in a long time, an equal number of people, I think it's 42%, said that they thought that Russia was both on the right track and on the wrong track. Clearly, there are changes. Clearly, the Kremlin and United Russia are worried about it. But I think at the end of the day, it means that the party will finesse things differently. I don't think it's going to result in any substantial change in any way in the political system or in who rules. And by finessing, I mean creating more barriers and becoming, showing more authoritarian tendencies.
Kirill, what do you think about that?
I can agree with Gregory, but partly. First of all, we can speak about some ideal elections in Russia. Yes, frauds, violations, and so on. It's a permanent context of modern Russian political process. And what we have, it's what we have, do we have now, and that's all. And we can analyze not something that could happen some in future or in some other circumstances, but what happened now. What do we see? First of all, it's a growing importance and strength of Communist Party because of this some fears of population, some disappointment, and so on. Secondly, it's a question of inability of United Russia political party. They can't even organize these fake elections and to gain these results. They really do want.
Why is that, though? Why can they sometimes organize these fake elections and get the results they want? For example, the 2007 Duma elections, the last round of local elections, which led to a walkout of the so-called fake opposition in the Duma. But yet this time, they even despite the falsification, despite the administrative resources, they still only get 40% in Tver? I mean, really?
How much do they need? I mean, they got how much they needed. They maintain control of all 12 regions. They don't need any more.
I think they need 50, 55, yes. 70.
Under 40% looks bad.
Yes.
Under 40%.
It's a bad result for them, especially in the eyes of their Moscow chiefs. Yeah.
But we've had previous elections in which other parties have won, admittedly not real opposition parties. But here, United Russia won every single election. Yes, it lost ground in a lot of regions. But I really don't see this as a, you know, any kind of real threat. I agree that the Kremlin, which is hypersensitive about any kind of perceived threat, to its rule, reacts in this way and that way. And of course, that's why you had these rather absurd seeming comments from Grozlov and Putin, which sort of triggers this commentary about how divorced they are from reality. But I think at the end of the day, they really don't have anything to worry about.
This provides an excellent segue into where I want to go next. You can't really, as Kirill, as you mentioned, this is a feature of modern Russian elections. You can't talk about Russian elections without talking about these concepts that are alien every place else. Administrative resources, ballot stuffing. Okay, everybody's heard of this. This special word, administrative resources, using the resources of the state, mostly to get state employees and people dependent on the state to vote the way the regime wants them to. Let's listen now to opposition Boris Nemtsov talking about this.
У нас в стране уже давно нет выборов.
In this country, we haven't had elections for a long time, in the normal sense of the word. There is the party of the Russian bureaucracy, now known as the Party of Thieves and Conmen, with Putin at its head. This party does not engage in debates with the people or opposition, explains nothing, mostly engages in blackmail of pensioners and state employees.
What about it? I mean, Nemtsov seems to agree pretty much with your take on this, that these elections are fake, they're orchestrated. But to what extent do they reflect, to a degree, public opinion, a snapshot of public opinion, despite the falsification, despite the administrative resources, a snapshot of public opinion at a point in time? And I'll give you an example. 2007, United Russia won 2/3 of the vote for the State Duma. Everybody agreed it was falsified to a degree, but everybody also agreed that at that point in time, United Russia had overwhelming support, and they would have won a free and fair election. The authorities just wanted more. Now, even with the falsification, their number decreased dramatically. So to what extent, given the fakeness of Russian elections, do these elections actually reflect the will of the voters, even in some distorted sense?
Well, look, I mean, you're 2007, you're talking about elections to the national parliament. These are regional elections, and you have to take that into account. First of all, voters are more familiar with their candidates because these are people talking about issues that have an impact, a direct impact on these people's lives. They're much more local issues on the one hand. On the other, I think that probably, this is just a guess, I would assume that the people who are responsible for carrying out the use of administrative resources, regional administration chiefs, local administration chiefs, factory managers, so on and so forth, that there's less pressure. Again, this is just, I'm just hazarding a guess here. But I think at the end of the day, I agree with what Nemtsov said, and I think that it's very hard to talk about what percentages mean. It's very hard to talk about what poll results mean leading up to elections, because, you know, one pollster said not too long ago, there's no such thing left in Russia as public opinion. People will say that they voted for the person they think will win. But when you have opposition candidates banned from the state media, they can't get their views across, they can't get registered, then there's the ballot stuffing, there's the administrative resources. Yes, I agree with you. It's very difficult to talk about, you know, any real conclusions that we can take from these percentages. I mean, I take it with a huge grain of salt. I mean, I look at the who actually maintains control, United Russia. I suspect that they're going to use even more of all the dirty things they did this time. Next time around, you know, that's all I can say, really.
What about it? What about it, Kirill? Do you agree with that?
I think it's, of course, it's a risky business to guess something about the numbers and so on, but I can say that my opinion, that the difference between these numbers and the real, so-called real numbers, we can define what does it mean, real numbers, but is 10-15%. I think that United Russia is still rather popular among Russian population. This is a fact. Of course, there is still some votes, some percents from just Russia, from communist, maybe from some, maybe from Yabloko. We'll return to the problem of this real opposition parties in these elections. But I think United Russia is still a leader in Russian political process. Because of the total control over the official TV and so on, but there is no any, there couldn't be any real fair play in Russian politics after 1991. Remember Yeltsin's times. Голосуй или проиграешь. Yes,
yeah.
The same thing. Yes, there were no any attempts to play fair play in Russian politics.
And there's one thing I see that's similar between the Yeltsin's time and now, and you alluded to this with the rise of the communists, and the communists are sort of absorbing all of the discontent. Now, what if you had a real opposition party in the mix, a Yabloko or a Pravo Del or one of these other Solidarity, what have you? Would one of these other opposition parties be able to get some of that discontent and capitalize on that politically? Or are we stuck in this kind of binary situation where it's the authorities or the completely unacceptable alternative?
I think there are two sides of the problem. First of all, is that of course, communists are the most popular political party in Russia after United Russia. We all of us, we understand why it's happened. Yes, because of the popularity of some kind of mental communist revival,
party organization,
or and it's really represents some social interests of Russian people.
But it's an old demographic. It's fading.
It's failing, but it's still, and they are trying. I know in some regions they are trying to find some other ground, some other social group, some other people, and so on, not just pensioner and budgetniki, yes, as it was told by Nemtsov. But, of course, it's a kind of old-style or old-fashioned opposition. I think the real opposition... What these elections mean for so-called real opposition in Russia? It is disastrous. It was disastrous.
For the real opposition.
Yes, disastrous. Mm-hmm. Of course, they were excluded from the electoral process in a lot of regions. But
almost all of them.
Yes, but... In the places where they took part in the process and in the elections and so on, they absolutely failed.
Why is that? Is it that people still associate them with the 90s and the hardships of the 90s? They can't get over that legacy?
Maybe this discussion could turn kind of academic.
We don't want that to happen.
Yes. But I think it's a question of agenda, of modern political agenda in modern political Russia. This old style, old-fashioned agenda about the communist past, dark communist past, and the bright, I don't know, capitalist future is not very popular among Russians. This new political agenda can grow from the real interests of various groups of Russian population. Some ecological problems, some social problems, as we saw in the case of Khimki Forest, and so on. And the opposition party or movement who can unite all these all these movements, all these interests in some kind of organization, that will be a real new Russian opposition.
Well, Greg, I wanted to ask you about this, because you've done a lot of reporting on the Russian opposition. And why is it that nobody has been able to tap into this clear discontent we see in civil society? You may think it's not consequential, or it is consequential, but you do see this with Khimki and with a lot of these other things that were happening last summer with social protests, the blue light, the blue bucket light protests, and so on. This the drivers out in Vladivostok back in 2008, rappers like Noise MC. I mean, all of these things. There is a reservoir in the society that nobody, and I mean nobody, is tapping into. Why can't the traditional opposition do that?
Well, it's small. There's always going to be opposition. There are always going to be various interest groups who have the guts to go out and protest. And we've seen more and more of that, especially last summer. Of course, last summer was a year of bigger disasters than usual. But I think at the end of the day, we really have to talk about broader tendencies and behaviors in Russian society. And the one thing that I keep coming back to when I ask myself these questions, why don't Russians go out and protest? As Kirill was saying, the gap between rich and poor keeps growing. Now there are more billionaires in Moscow, Forbes magazine says, than any other city in the world. This is outrageous. Surely people would come out and follow the example of the Blue Bucket brigades and so on and so forth. But I think that one of the things that Prime Minister Putin has done, and the Kremlin under him has done, is revived a kind of neo-Soviet system in which everybody is involved in corruption. The fact that if you drive a car, you have to you routinely stop and almost every day have to pay bribes to get when you're stopped for an infraction you did or didn't commit. The fact that if you own a corner shop, where you sell potato chips and beer, and you know that every week a fire inspector or a sanitation inspector or a policeman or, you know, a beat cop will come to you and you have to pay him a bribe, makes essentially the entire society complicit. And I think a certain number of people feel that they have a stake in the system because, yes, you pay a bribe, but you also get ahead. You have your business. And it also makes the authorities able to control society, because if you're known to have given a bribe, you know that this can be used against you. You're not going to go out and complain. These are very general sort of broad things, but I look at things like that when I try to explain why people don't get angry and go out and protest. The Kremlin has a very effective system of top-down control, and it makes people complicit. And the politics that we see on television, parties, voting, it's also largely Soviet-style voting. There were elections under the Soviet Union, as we all know. They didn't mean anything, didn't tell you anything about the Soviet system. So I think this kind of dynamic is going on.
But why hasn't but given that, and I agree with all of that, there is some discontent there, and no political party save the communists, has been able to tap into any of that discontent. And the communists aren't tapping into the discontent we're talking about with Himki and with the Blue Bucket protests and so on. Nobody is tapping into that. Isn't there a big electorate there for somebody to grab?
This is a threat to the communists as well. I mean, the communists are part and parcel of the Putin system. They're
as they were the Yeltsin system.
As they were, well, I think it was a different dynamic. I mean, the communists tried to get Yeltsin impeached. Right. Let's not forget that. And they obstructed parliament. They obstructed a lot of the liberal reform under the Yeltsin years, economic reform in the 1990s. I think it was a different dynamic then. But they are part of the system now, and they know that. They play by the rules set by the Kremlin. They are not a real threat to the Kremlin. So I think in that sense, the real opposition and real opposition sentiment and any kind of tendencies are a threat to the communists as they are to the Kremlin. I think one of the reasons that the opposition is ineffective is that you have various leaders who are very good in certain things, Nemtsov, whom we heard among them, but they're unable to unite. They spend most of their time bickering among themselves, and you see the same tendency in this, the newest of
the oldest Russian story, actually,
the People's Freedom Party, of which Nemtsov is a member, will now most likely put one of its leaders, Vladimir Milov, up as a presidential candidate. He's managed to already alienate half of the Russian opposition, and I think that it's almost tragic to watch this sort of falling apart as you look on.
Well, on that note, we'll move on to the final issue I wanted to discuss is that, and we've touched on this a bit in the session here, is that what do these mean for the upcoming sessions? I mean, can we expect now? I think the authorities are disappointed in the results. You say they're good enough. I still think they're disappointed.
I agree.
And I don't think they could find getting 40% acceptable in the State Duma elections, even if it gives them a majority. So what do we expect now come December? Because they don't want to suffer an embarrassment come December. I'm convinced that United, and I've written about it in the blog extensively, that United Russia is central to Putin's plans for maintaining control of politics in Russia, regardless of what position he holds, number one. And number two, you're not going to, however the presidential election turns out, whether it's Medvedev or Putin, and it's subject of endless speculation, they want that to be a highly choreographed affair. And if they get embarrassed in December in any way, shape, or form going into those Duma elections, it's going to be more difficult for them to choreograph the presidential elections. Can we expect the administration, the administrative methods to be turned up to 11, so to speak, in the next election? Kirill, what do you think about that?
I'm not sure that it will go in this way, because Russia and Russian president and Russian prime minister and Russian oligarchs and ministers, they want to go in the modern world. They want to go to West, to London, to send their children to study, whatever, in Harvard and London School of Economics, as you remember Colonel Gaddafi did, and so on. Of course, they never cross, I think, they never cross this line. Never. But another question I think is much more interesting. It's the future behavior of some part of Russian population. It's a very fashionable modern sociological trend in Russia now to divide this Russian population into two parts: those who watch TV and those who watch their laptop screen. And the future elections and the future, I think, future of Russian Federation will depend on those who watch laptop screen. If they will go to vote, yes, next time, or maybe, I don't know where, when they could decide the situation, could decide the problem, resolve the problem into the, I think, in the right way, because they're economically active, they're Western, they allow Western values and so on, and they are modestly, yes, modestly, but interested in politics. Mm-hmm. So that is the future.
So you think the ruling party could suffer a defeat if these people came to the polls?
Yes, of course, because as I understand, the most part of this watching laptop screens. Right. People, they don't want to have something with this United Russia. So.
But what about the administrative resources, Greg? I assume you would not agree with that optimistic assessment. I want to believe it, for sure. What do you see happening?
Have to disagree with Kirill about the first of all the Western influence. I think we in the West think that the Russian political leadership should take Western opinion into account. But I haven't seen any signs of that in the past. I haven't seen any signs that of, for example, Dmitry Medvedev withholding from threatening to direct nuclear missiles at Western Europe. I haven't seen any sign that the Kremlin is in any way worried that if they do one thing, if they sentence Mikhail Khodorkovsky to another stint in prison,
Didn't understand the political consequences of this in the beginning of the notice. Now they can't stop. You understand. But in 2003, they just couldn't even imagine the political consequences of this Khodorkovsky trial.
Nevertheless, I mean, that's one thing. The second is that, yes, I think that the Kremlin will use all the so-called administrative resources, that it has to.
So you think that we won't see a result like this come December? We'll start to we'll see a result that looks a lot more like the December 2007 result.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of variables. There are some regions that are easier to control. Some regions deliver 99% of the vote for United Russia. There are other regions where there is some opposition presence. So it's impossible to choreograph it precisely. The importance is that United Russia maintains control, and I believe I believe that it will.
Okay. Kirill, last word from you.
Oh, it will be a very interesting year.
Okay. All right. On that note, we'll wrap up today's edition of the Power Vertical podcast. Again, I remind you that in the studio with me was Kirill Kobrin, the managing editor of RFERL's Russian service, and Gregory Pfeiffer, senior correspondent for RFERL and author of the book The Great Gamble, The Soviet War in Afghanistan. Thank you. And that's all for today's edition of the Power Vertical podcast. I'd like to remind you that you can read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org or follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/powervertical. And now I leave you with a clip from one of my favorite Russian rappers, Noize MC.